Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Lords of Limited. My name is Ben Warney, and joining me on the line, as always, Mr. Ethan Imminent Doom Sachs. Imminent Doom, you might say. It's a throwback from an older era, but Spider-Man's flopped. What are we left with? Cube, baby. How do you feel about Imminent Doom in the Lords of Limited cube?
Are you going to make a Lords of Limited cube? Is that what we're talking about on LOL?
Am I going to make a Lords of Limited cube, or are we going to make a Lords of Limited cube? That's the question.
Okay. Yeah, I guess I don't even know who you are. I've barely talked to you about Magic in the past month. He's on the show. He's off the show. He's here. He's not here. How are you, buddy? I was in Seattle last weekend. We had our episode with the gents from Lucky Paper Radio, which I assume, have you had a chance to listen?
Oh, not only have I listened, I am fired up. We need to do episodes without me on them more often so that I can listen to them, because our podcast is great. And
thank you.
And yeah, I had never listened to their podcast, listened to that episode, and then we got some questions about Cube, and I went deep down a Cube rabbit hole. I got totally lost. I've already binged many of their episodes on designing cubes, and I was like, this sounds like fun. I'll pick a few cards for the cube, and now I have giant lists of cards for the Lords of Limited cube.
For people not watching on YouTube, my jaw is on the floor right now. I have no idea. I teased in our Discord that Ben had messaged me earlier this week of hey, don't worry, I've got Lords Unlimited covered. So I had no idea what you had in store for us this week, but now I'm starting to get a little bit of an inkling that it might be about a Lords of Limited cube, which is very exciting. What's the state of Magic for you right now? So I do have to ask, are you drafting Modern Horizons 3 Flashback right now, sir?
I am drafting Modern Horizons 3 Flashback. Not as much as I drafted.
I saw your trolley Blue Sky message. I assume it also made its way to Twitter. But about every time you face an Eldrazi deck in MH3, you feel like you're playing against the data.
Yeah, and winning, which feels great. I love that feeling. I have not played MH3 as much as I played Duskmourne. I played a lot of Duskmourne, and I had Cursed Recording in my pool every time. It was not always in my deck, but I had it in my pool every time, except the last draft I did. So I drafted several sweet Cursed Recording decks. I had a red-black one that was the best of them. It was very good. And then the very last draft I did was the Monday night before it was going to go off. Or no, it was the Sunday night before it was going to go off, that Tuesday. Mm-hmm. And I want to see what you would do in this situation.
Oh, dear.
I opened the stupid ghostly awesome sauce thing.
Oh, the white one?
Yeah, that makes 3/1 flyers every time you poop out an enchantment, the 3 white.
Yep.
Opened that, and then got past the blue, what is that cycle called of Mythics? Overlord? I got past the blue Overlord.
Okay, yeah, blue one's okay.
Okay, so took that white rare ghostly dancers into blue Overlord, pack one, pick 3. I don't remember what the choice was, but it was a good blue-white enchantments card or Cursed Recording.
I'm not as Cursed Recording pilled as you, so I would just stay on track with the blue-white cards.
Yes. That's what I was like, I really want to take this Cursed Recording, but this seems pretty irresponsible. And so I turned my back on Cursed Recording. And I am ashamed to say I could have had that Cursed Recording plus another Cursed Recording, pack 1, pick 8, plus a third Cursed Recording.
Is that good?
Pick 6. Oh, yeah. It would have been great. I'd have found it way more often.
That's just wild. Just wild. Yeah, I had a similar experience in terms of, I forced red-black sacrifice most of the drafts. But the times where, it clearly wasn't open or I was clearly supposed to do something else, I had that sort of feeling of, I guess I'll do this, but not as fun. Duskmourne holds up. Man, is that a goated set.
Duskmourne's really good. So is MH3. I don't get your hatred for MH3. I've got 5 Sneaky Snackers and Buried Alive in my deck right now. It's going awesome.
Not fun. I don't know. It's not fun. We'll get to one of our questions. We are doing a Q&A, by the way. We're doing a Q&A today, so thank you everybody who submitted questions for that. One of our questions later on is about sometimes you drive with the formats and sometimes you don't. What's that about? And I have some thoughts about that, and I think that's partially why MH3 does not jive with me. So we've got a lot of questions to get to, and we'll get our housekeeping out of the way and dive in to as many as we can get to. First things first, the Patreon page, patreon.com/lordsoflimited, is where folks can go to give back to the show if they so choose. We've got some great perks over at the Patreon page. Two things we always want to shout out. One is access to our Discord, where if we do these Q&A episodes, you can drop some questions and be first up to get our ears and attention, I suppose, our eyes and attention for the questions. So thanks again to the members of our Discord for that. And we also want to shout out our podcast feed, which gives you not only this episode a day early ad-free, but also access to our bonus weekly episode of Lords Unlimited, which it sounds like we may be doing some cube design this week on that. So if you want to check that out, you can find that over at the Patreon page. You can even do a free week trial over at the Patreon if you want to see how that fits into your life before diving in. And we want to shout out our new patrons the first week that they join. So this week we're welcoming Stardust, Justin, and Gabriel. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We really appreciate your support.
Yeah, cannot say thank you enough. I don't know if people can hear that coming through the background, but it is storming here to beat the band. Oh. It is like intensely storming.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. No lawn mowing for you this afternoon, I suppose.
No lawn mowing for me. It is an absolute monsoon outside my house right now.
Oh, goodness. Okay. Okay. Well, hopefully everything stays nice and cozy where you are while we're recording. Ben, I think we must start with a question we're not going to be answering, but we have to shout out.
I mean, I kind of have an answer to this.
Okay, go for it.
So Sirkovitz wants to know, what is your favorite 17 lands data metric? Got in there early in the question.
First question.
With a beautiful troll question. And I love Sirkovitz, and I love Sirkovitz's sense of humor. My first thought was, well played. Very well played as a question. And secondly, I do kind of like when the data says that a deck is the best that I don't think is the best. That's my favorite 17 lands data metric.
Okay. Great.
Because I feel like I have an enemy then of the state to go after all format.
Great. Love it. I know.
Okay. On to the next
one. On to the next one. So Incredible Plum asked, I am a long time Hearthstone player and switched to having Magic Limited as my main game. Do you recommend any resources for learning draft and gameplay fundamentals? And my first thought was like, why, yes, I do. I have a podcast to recommend to you called Lords of Limited, but that's obviously not what they're asking because they're in our Discord.
Yeah. I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is you should be listening to Limited Resources if you're not. Limited Level Ups. Mm-hmm. There's a bevy of quality limited podcasts out there. Mm-hmm. I would also say Reduke has some really good articles, but if you're already listening to our podcast, it sounds like you're probably beyond Reduke's, like, here's how to draft type articles. But we also have a very good thing in our Discord that's like a list of evergreen episodes of Lords of Limited that maybe if you're a newer listener, you could go back and listen to those episodes. But honestly, the best thing to do, I think, the most helpful piece of feedback, if you're already seeking out content like our podcast, is to watch draft videos of good players. So like, for example, Paul Cheon comes to mind, I think puts a draft video out of the current format every day on every YouTube, day. Much like LSV does for cube videos. And I would just draft along with Paul. I would watch the video, pack one, pick one. When it comes up, pause it and think, what would I pick here? And then unpause it, listen to what Paul says, see if you match up or not, and then think about why, and then get to pack one, two, pause the video, look, think what you would do, unpause, listen to Paul talk, that sort of thing. I think that is by far the best way, and same play for game, same thing for gameplay too. Like Paul gets his opening hand, pause, think about how would I sequence my first few turns, see if Paul does that. If you get to a turn where there's a lot of options, pause, think about what you do, unpause, see what Paul would do. And it wouldn't have to be just Paul, but that's the first person that came to mind for YouTube videos. But I think using YouTube videos in that way is one of the best ways to get better. Nobody ever told me to do that. I just really enjoyed doing that when CFB videos would go up back in the day. And I did it religiously with almost every CFB video that went up for a long period of my life.
It's not surprising to me. And I know we've talked about this before, but like, we are just the same person. Like that is, that's my exact answer. I don't know. I'm not familiar with these Reed Duke, like 101 articles you're talking about. So maybe we'll have to find them and link them. Because I was thinking like, there isn't really a like, they're not like how to get better at draft videos that are like, you know, if you're playing, I don't know, if you're learning pickleball and you're like, I want to like figure out a serve or something, like I'm sure you could find like a 5 or 10 minute video about something, you know, does that exist for limited? There isn't really
no,
a like
not really
like,
no.
Here's how to keep a mulligan, or here's how to like sequence your opening turns, or you know, there's lots of stuff about draft, I think, specifically. But yeah, I had the same feedback as you, which is just from my own experience of like just watch videos of people that are gonna explain their thought process. Like Paul is a good person, Reed Duke is a great person. So that you can go, okay, pause, what would I do? Unpause, hear what they would do, think about if there's a difference, why, and move on from there. I think that's the best way to do it.
That takes us on to our next question, which comes from Blade the King. Favorite vintage cube, pack one, pick one, more so pet cards rather than most powerful?
I mean, I feel like we've done this already recently, but I wrote Prophet's Eidetic Memory or VV. I'm a big fan of the blue-red tempo decks. I did put an asterisk to, I guess, Luris is a pet card of mine, though I feel like Companions aren't that good in Vintage Cube.
It's Companion really Luris in Vintage Cube is pretty bad, I think. Unless it's free, but like making Luris your game plan and trying to play like a little grindy mid-range black-white deck, that is a recipe for disaster. If Luris is off-plan and just happens to fit in your deck, great. Companion away.
Right. If you've got a low-curve aggro deck, great. If you've got Black Lotus or LED, could be great. But like otherwise, yes, I agree. And you know, Lutri's free. I can't. Why the heck is Zerda?
Yeah.
Why is Zerda in the cube? Like I know
infinite with Basalt Monolith.
Yeah, but not as a companion. Like you just play it in those decks.
You can companion it.
You can. Can't companion it with Urza's Saga, which is a big stinker.
The thing
I do want to shout out about Luris currently, I have a Luris deck right now, actually, that I'm 1-0 with, that has the new Spider-Man 2 drops are good with Luris because they're 2 mana plays, but you can flip them or you can just cast them from your hand as, you know, the 4 or 5 drops. So I've got like a 4-color Luris deck that's rocking 2 of those.
You are going to love the Lords of Limited Cube. You're going to love it.
I can't wait.
We can just pop the companions right on the Lords of Limited Cube.
Can Ketramos get in? Can we put Ketramos in? My beloved?
Ketramos.
The one white black thing that cares about things being exiled that I was obsessed with.
Ketramos is on the list. Don't you worry.
What about you? What about you, Vintage Cube?
Favorite Vintage Cube pack one pick ones. I mean, if I'm going old school, Balance is my favorite Vintage Cube pack one.
Ooh, okay. Yeah.
The Balance Greater Gargadon, either pack one pick one in either one of those. This is also old school, but that's when I played the most Vintage Cube, and that's what comes to mind for me for favorite, is I love a good Wildfire deck. So first picking Wildfire is a very fun thing for me. I love Opposition, like, again, from old school Vintage Cube. That is more power and less so fun, but I do like winning quite effectively.
Decidedly.
I want to know that I've won when I win. So I love a good Opposition. I think in the current Vintage Cube, I really enjoy disruptive decks. I like pack one, pick one, and a good Thoughtseize. That's one of my pet cards to vintage the pick one.
That's not that fun. It doesn't sound fun to first pick Thoughtseize.
It says pet cards. It doesn't say fun. Thoughtseize is a pet card of mine. I also would say Strip Mine too. I love a good Strip Mine, Renin 6, Crucible, Fast Bond, some draw 7s. Which I don't really think is that powerful.
It's like a 6-card combo. all of these things.
But when it comes together, you're doing it, baby.
For sure. Jack/MilkCows asks, if you could design your own limited format with pre-existing mechanics, which mechanics would you want to include and why? I'm pretty happy with my answer with this one.
What's your answer?
Well, in a sort of, I think, survivor fashion, I decided I was going to design a second chance mechanics set. So a set full of mechanics that sort of flopped the first time around and hopefully could give them a put them in the right context or maybe push the power of the cards around them to make the mechanics good. So I'm going to include Cypher, which was the Dimir mechanic from Gatecrash.
Oh, wow. That needs a second chance. Or maybe not. That should just be put to bed.
A couple of exile mechanics. So maybe there could be overlap with Foretell and Plot. So cards like you spend mana to put them in exile and then come back. Neither of those mechanics.
Everybody loves waiting to cast their cards after they've spent mana on them.
Look, I think maybe it could work. Just maybe. I think battles could use a little bit of a second chance. And not that they flopped the first time around, but I would like them to have a second chance. I would like more companions, please.
Okay.
So that was what I chose.
This is one of the questions that got me started thinking about what would a Lords of Limited Cube look like? And I think Delirium is like top of the list for me after Duskborn. I think the drafting puzzle of getting Delirium to work and the deck building puzzle of getting Delirium to work is very interesting. So I would definitely include Delirium. I love a good cycling. So I think cycling's got to be in there for me. And that also helps fuel the Delirium, like being able to turn on Delirium at instant speed by cycling a permanent type that you're missing is always a fun play pattern. I think shout out to, I think it was Triple B or someone maybe in the Discord that I had forgotten about the unnamed Neo. If you control an artifact and if you control an enchantment, I think that was a really nice, similar to Delirium. I think that was a really nice mechanic that I think didn't get explored that deeply. And then alongside that, you could have artifacts matter. You could have enchantments matter. Like, basically, I would want to.
You want types.
Expand.
You want
types. I would want to expand on Duskmourn. Yeah. Like types matter. I think Duskmourn did it really well.
Nice. Like it.
All right. The Trickster wants to know, to build on Jack's question, what makes good formats good and why did Spider-Man fail and how can other sets' successes steer game design? If you guys had controls of the next set, what would you like to see as far as color balance, format speed, build arounds, bombiness, removal availability, etc.? So a lot of questions here. Let's start with what makes good formats good? You wrote an article about this.
I did write an article about this. That was the first place I went, was to be like, what did I say when I wrote this article for?
Do you still agree with yourself? Archer?
I do. Well, and it's interesting that I think if you look at this list, Spider-Man does check a lot of these boxes, but I think Spider-Man is just an inherently flawed set in terms of its like its size, its perceived slapdash nature. I think obviously the difference between digital and paper names is not helping it, but I think it just being it being small, there being a pretty big power level gap between what the best and the worst decks or best and worst colors are. Like how bad red is in the set is a pretty big detriment when the set is so small. And I like the red, like I like getting to draft red cards when I can in the set, or I liked it in the week that I was drafting Spider-Man. But I think there's just some problems there. But this article we're alluding to, I wrote about the top eight things or top eight characteristics of good limited sets, which are colorless mana fixing, lands as viable draft picks, strong removal at common, sideways build arounds at rare and uncommon, synergistic decks that are greater than the sum of their parts, utilization of the graveyard as a resource, aggressive decks that keep the format in check, and ways to mitigate flood and screw. And I think I agree with those as good characteristics. And Spider-Man does some of those, but I think the problem with Spider-Man is just that it just can't hold up to the kind of drafting that you and I and our listeners want to do of a set.
Right. I mean, you have literally half the number of cards and half the number of drafters. And I think pick two, I still think pick two is very interesting to talk about and think about. Mm-hmm. I think the thing that doesn't work for Spider-Man with pick two or without pick two is that I don't like feeling shoved into what I have to draft. And I don't think there's a way to avoid that. Like you either start and you get to keep drafting what you started in, or you have to pivot. And there's not that gray middle room that exists in a lot of eight-person draft pods where you have a choice to keep down your path or kind of hedge your bets, or it just all happens so fast and the draft is done, like in the first four picks.
It feels closer to like those jumpstart events where you would just like, I'm going to join this, and it just gives you a deck randomly. Yeah. And like that's kind of what's happening if you're reading signals in pick two draft for Spider-Man, where like you're gonna be given a deck by the table. And so you don't really have a lot of agency over it, which I don't love.
Yeah, and I think if we have controls of the next set, we're trying to fulfill Ethan's article. And I am trying to, I think about these things for the Lords of Limited Cube. that we're going to be talking about on Lords Unlimited, but not, I haven't gone that deep yet. Like, as far as I've gone is just these are cards I like.
Mm-hmm. Well, this next question might have a lot to say about it. Shorty XV asks, as limited players, have you ever wanted to explore building a cube, building one as a community, personally, etc.? I like that the recent episode discusses cube, and I think there's room to dive in here also.
Yeah, shout out to Shorty. Huge misnomer. Shorty is a giant human being. We've met them at Magic conventions.
Yeah.
And I, prior to reading this question, had not ever wanted to build a cube. And then after listening to Lucky Paper Radio and hearing them wax poetic about why they like engaging with cube and things like that, and then thinking about this, and then some people were like, ooh, what would a Lords of Limited cube look like? And then I was like, ooh, what would a Lords of Limited cube look like? Well, Cursed Recording is definitely going to be in there. Imminent Doom is definitely going to be in there. And I just, like, that was how it started. I just had a list of, like, 20 cards iconic. That, like, had to be in. Like, iconic Lords of Limited cards. And then once that had happened, like, the dam broke open. I couldn't think about anything else.
So it was it this question? That started
this question combined with the lucky paper, all of it together.
Oh my gosh, so good. I still do have a cube in my closet. It's a proxied cube, but a cube nonetheless. And I used to have a cube that was effectively like a legacy cube when I lived in New York. Again, all proxied, but a legacy cube that I would play with three friends or often with my friend Charlie. He and I would do like 1v1 drafts with it. I also printed out a proxy of a Tubert because I don't have occasions to play cube ever. I mean, it sounds like if we have like a digital one, if we make a, you know, Lords Limited one that's arena draftable, then I might have more occasion to. But like in terms of keeping a paper cube, I just don't have an occasion to do so. So that's why I do it in the digital world so much. I think we've talked about this, but you remember years ago, this is what, I think the year before we started the podcast, they had the You Make the Cube contest for Magic Online. Do you know I submitted a cube for that?
I did not.
Yeah. I mean, it was bad. I made a like creature type matter, like a tribal cube for it and submitted that. It did not make any cuts. But yeah. So I've been in the cube design space before, and it sounds like I will be again.
Let's go. Got 'em. Cold Brew Nate wants to know, what skills from your other professions do you think would help you the most in Magic? I'll go first here. What should help and doesn't. As a teacher, I have to be extraordinarily patient. Like, extraordinarily patient. But that should, I think, mean that I am less prone to tilting. But I don't think it really works that way. I'm still pretty prone to tilting. But that mm-hmm. should help. And I think the other thing for music is to be really good at music. And there was a point in my life where I played really well as far as like classically, orchestrally. And that mm-hmm. ship has sort of sailed. It's been a long time since I practiced seriously. But like the single-mindedness that you have to approach trying to be like a classical orchestral musician with, of like get in the practice room, try to make this tiny thing better. I mean, like you're very good. And then like the grind of getting very good to great, like that little tiny gap and trying to fill that out and get 1% better over the course of, you know, 3 months or something to try to perfect these excerpts when you get on stage to do your audition. I do know how to do that, but I'm just not interested in doing it for Magic again. So I do things that should help me very much that don't really, but I think those two things are the biggest carryover.
I like that your answers are both like, theoretically, my job should inform Magic in this way, but for me, no, it doesn't. I guess if from my other profession being acting, I would say that it's like putting yourself in other people's shoes. And like trying to understand motivation. Like, I think one of the things I'm very good at
is like doing that a lot when you play Magic.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's not like it gives me a huge edge, but it is. I don't know. I think it's helpful to just be like, why would you do this? Okay, you paused here or you made this attack. if I were a sound and reasonable human being, why would I make that move, you know?
Sometimes I think people are just insane, though. And I've watched you get yourself in trouble doing that before, like on stream.
Sure. Yeah. I think, like, the default of, like, if my opponent is insane, I'm going to win still gonna anyway.
Have yeah.
And
yeah.
So I might as well give them the benefit of the doubt. Yeah. I mean, there are definitely times where I, like, they play out their hand and then I'm baffled because I'm like, I could have sworn you had a combat trick there.
Right.
You know, but yeah, whatever. Pangean C asks, what is your opinion on what going deep in a format means? This is a Ben Wernie TM, like copyrighted phrase. I feel like you guys talk about this to mean a lot of things past just knowing what the archetypes are and the best decks. So getting your opinion on what that means, how many drafts do you guys feel comfortable doing until you feel like you've gone deep? And is there a part of experimentation that comes with going deep that you enjoy?
I have a very specific answer to the timing of this. To me, going deep is when I understand the format completely. Like, I feel like I know what draft in and draft out, if I'm trying to optimize my win percentage, what I'm quote-unquote supposed to pick. And then I know I'm going, when I am actually going deep, is when I'm choosing things other than that purposefully, still with the intent of trying my hardest to win. Like, I know I'm supposed to pick X, but I think this other thing has potential. And
but
I
I'm going to pick Cursed Recording anyway.
Yeah, and win with Cursed Recording. And there's a very satisfying feeling of carving out your own little corner of a format. And that's when I feel like I have gone deep. And sometimes it's 20 drafts, sometimes it's 50 drafts. I don't think it's an amount of time or amount of drafts. It's just a depth of format knowledge that lets you know what is correct, do something that's incorrect, and win anyway because of how well you know the format.
Yeah, I said for me, going deep means, and we've said this before, but seeing the Matrix, which I said also might be worthwhile as an episode in and of itself. And I said that seeing the Matrix means, like, I can see the draft like three steps ahead. Like, oh, if I take this card, it's a white card, but it's really best in blue-white, but I really don't succeed with blue-white, and so I'm going to do this instead. Like, I think that's similar to what you're talking about. Or if I take this, what I'm looking for is this. Or if I, oh, I see this pick five, that means this is open, I'm going to take that, and here's what I'm looking for. Like, that it's, I'm much more thinking about, you know, the picks that are coming, how the deck is going to look like, how it's going to play out, what pieces do I need. And that, I feel like, is what going deep is. And I said, I did throw a number at like 40 drafts out there, I think. But yeah, you said 20, maybe it's 20, maybe it's 50. I think it's somewhere in that range. And I never quite get, like, it's funny, I just talked about forcing red, black, and Duskmourn flashback. I will sometimes get to that point when a format is live. But I really do enjoy, I enjoy the gumption decks, the, like, build it and they will come kind of decks. And I feel like those kinds of decks only emerge, or that kind of strategy only emerges when I feel like I see the Matrix.
Correct. Yeah. Love it. All right. Next up, we've got Norman, AKA Talus Engineer, wants to know, somehow you've ended up challenging the devil himself to a draft. Classic soul on the line situation. He has packs available of every draft format ever printed. What are you drafting? And what do you hope to pack one, pick one?
Really hard to not just say Rakdos and Duskmourn after last
That's
week.
That's just recency bias, right?
I mean, it is, but it's also like, it's a set I enjoy. It's a really good deck in that format. It is a deck I'm very good at piloting. Like, I don't, is there a better answer? You want me to give a different answer? You want me to say?
You're never choosing what I'm choosing. I was torn between
Bat Song and Lord of the Rings.
No. I think there's too much that can go wrong in Lord of the Rings. I was trying to pick a format where I feel like I'm most likely to keep my soul. Like, that I needed to win. And yeah. So I was between IKO, because I feel like I know that format really intimately. I was trying to find a format where I feel like I always end up with a good deck. Like, that it's very hard if you navigate the draft well to not end up with a good deck. Like, that there's a flatter power level, high synergies, that sort of stuff. So I was torn between IKO, but, like, there's always the chance with IKO that...
You open a companion, like, I can't pick IKO.
Well, sure. But I was thinking, okay, IKO and I want to open Lurrus. But there's always the chance that the devil, like, spikes a Zenith Flare deck and I'm toast. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Okay.
So I ended up settling on, I want to draft DMU. And I'm most hoping to open Wing Mantle Chaplain. But I feel like I can beat Wingmantle Chaplain if the devil opens Wingmantle Chaplain. I think I DMU, know. I feel very confident that I am favored against the devil in a draft of DMU.
Definitely never playing DMU, certainly not against the devil. Agent W asks, question which obviously only applies to one of you. Spoiler alert, we are not sure who this, who this applies to.
I think it applies to you. I think.
At what point
it's about do data, you, right? But it also seems angry at the data, which might mean it applies to me.
At what point do you begin to allow yourself to diverge from 17 lands data in a developed format towards your preferences? Do you find that there's a particular misrepresentation, for lack of a better word, of certain colors by the data set over set? I don't know at what point you begin to allow yourself to diverge from 17 lands data. But so it assumes, if the question is for me, it assumes that for a part of the format, I don't allow myself to diverge
right
from 17 lands data, which is not true.
I think the question is for you.
Okay, well, so I don't know how to answer the first half of this question. The second half of the question, I will say, is I'm not going to be surprised. I think green gets a data bloat almost every set now that it's like a stats monster.
Well, but it's not even that it's a stats monster. It is the color that is by definition the hardest to mess up playing with. Also, it's the hardest to miss build. Like, you cast your creatures and you attack with them. And so, like, I'm not trying to say that green is for stupid players or whatever. Like, that's not
the
point
of
it. Yes, we are. Like,
I'll say it.
Like, green is just the cards do the things. Like, it's harder to mess up building green decks. And so the cards, I think, are naturally going to win more when you just put them in your deck.
Yeah. So that's what I think. Triple B asks,
it's a great question. Is there a card you would want to be evergreen and just show up in every set?
And why is it Colossal Dreadmaw?
No. For me, it has to be a sideways build around rare. I was just thinking about which one.
Oh, interesting.
Is that not what you would want? What would you want?
Well, finish your answer.
I just think sideways build around rares adds so much to a format. And so, you know, I was floating around Cursed Recording, blah, 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 like things like that. And I was cycling through some of my pet rares. And I was like, well, but you don't always know those are going to be supported in the set. And I think the answer is Lurrus. I think Lurrus is always going to add. I think Lurrus is always going to be fun to try to companion. Lurrus, the risk reward of, in my case, do I companion, do I not? It's very interesting to think about for a portion of the draft.
Not really a question, I think. I think that's a good answer. Lurrus is a good answer. I went much more ho-hum meat and potatoes. I said Uncharted Haven. The like ETB tapped land, like choose a color and it taps for that color.
Yeah, okay. That is like, much I don't, more ho-hum.
I think my initial thought was Evolving Wilds, but I was like, I don't think I want... There's something like, I don't know, Delirium set, whatever. Like, you may not always want Evolving Wilds. Also, shuffling is terrible.
Yeah, gross.
So I went with Uncharted Haven. But I like Lurrus more.
JD Newland wants to know, what is a gameplay feature from MTGO you'd like to have on Arena? Not format. We all want Vintage Cube on Arena.
I want F6. I want
want F6
to pass the turn, please. That little double right arrow that does nothing really tilts me.
I agree. I also want F6. I think that's an easy snap answer. They also want to know, if the Arena devs decided to release another set like Artifact Remastered on Arena, what card type or keyword would you choose for the set, and what would its themes be? Like Enchantments Remastered or Cycling Remastered, for example.
I went with Graveyard Remastered.
Graveyard Remastered.
So I want Delve, Dredge, Manifest Dread, Delirium, Cycling, Flashback, Threshold, Embalm, Eternalize. Like, there's so much that you could do with Graveyard Remastered.
Graveyard Remastered sounds pretty sexy. I chose Cycling Remastered because I liked that. I was like, cycling matters, discard matters, madness. Mm-hmm. You could re-rack the Spider-Man mechanic that I don't even remember the name of now.
Mayhem.
Yeah, yeah, like that sort of thing. But I don't know if there's enough meat on that bone. Graveyard Remastered would be much cooler, I think.
The Seamus asks, what does it mean as a player when you do well in certain kinds of sets, but not others? What information can you glean from this, and how can you use that to improve your drafting? For example, I struggled mightily in Bloomborough, Foundations, and Edge of Eternities, but did better in Duskmourne, Tarkir, Dragonstorm, and Final Fantasy. I know others have had opposite or different struggles with other sets. Yeah, I mean, I think like you're going to do well in some sets and less well in others. I have some ideas about why that is. I don't know if I have ideas about how to stop that from happening or to improve it.
Well, I think, first of all, the Seamus, this means you have great taste in draft formats because you're doing well in good draft formats and you're doing poorly in bad draft formats. So I think if you're landing on one side
justice
of the coin...
Justice for Edge of Eternities. Justice for Edge of Eternities.
You want to land... If there's a Venn diagram, you want to land in the Duskmourne, Tarkir, Dragonstorm, Final Fantasy bubble, for sure.
Sure.
I think... Just as somebody who has struggled in similar formats as you, not that I struggled in Edge of Eternities, but I think there are definitely different types of sets. I do well in higher synergy sets that have a flatter overall power level because that's just my default way to try to draft decks, I think. But in some of the formats you mentioned, like Foundations or Bloomborough, I think gameplay matters a lot, and I do tend to suffer in formats that want you to play very tight games and like duke it out. I just am not, I don't have the fire to like really focus in on gameplay. I want a format where I get an edge, a significant edge in the draft.
If only you had a profession that could inform patience as one of your tools for gameplay. I also think it has a lot to do with like if your preferred or intuitive color pairs or color preferences
are good.
Like, it's not a coincidence that I like and do well in sets where Mardu is good. It is not a coincidence that you like and do well in sets where blue, red, and blue, white are good. Like, those are the things we like to do. And so when those are like, oh, that's good, then we have a good time and we do well. Like, I think there's a feedback loop there that you can't really like, you can learn what your preferences are from that. But you can't, I don't know how you then go, oh, and I'll apply that and I'll just get better at the things I don't like. Like, yes, I think that would be the next step, but easier said than done.
Bistromath wants to know, I have a non-game question because the game is so uninteresting right now. Magic just taking stray bullets.
Shots fired.
What is your go-to lowest effort to highest tasty factor weekly meal that you make for yourself or your family? I would just like it to be known that I have an answer to this question now.
And it's amazing.
2 years ago, I would not have had an answer.
Let's go for it.
Some salmon baked in the oven at 400 degrees for 20 minutes. What?
The granularity is excellent.
I want people to be able to repeat the recipe. You squeeze lemon juice over the top of the salmon and then a side of veggies. Roasted also in the oven over like a little bed of olive oil, some salt, some pepper, and then maybe some squash zucchini, maybe some Brussels sprouts, maybe some asparagus, and pop both those things in the oven for 20 minutes and add some rice. Boom, you're done.
Amazing. I feel like you are prime target for an air fryer. Is that an appliance that interests you?
I have one.
Oh.
And I was like, I asked for it for Christmas last year and my mom got one for me. And I initially used it and I was like, I don't like it. It feels dangerous, first of all. Like it gets very hot and I'm very nervous. Like sometimes you have to take things out of it and flip them or like shake the basket. And I don't love that process. And you can only make the one thing at a time. And like, for example, this recipe, like I do the salmon, do the veggies, shove it all in the oven, and then it's done. Like an air fryer, I'm doing that and I still have to make a side, or if I want chicken and fries, I make the chicken in the air fryer and then you have to make the fries in the air fryer. I have not been a fan, but maybe I'm misusing it because everybody seems to love them.
No, I mean, I'm not anti, but I know that it's not for me, just in terms of, I think, volume for sure, but also I have a small kitchen. Counter space is a premium real estate for me. there's lots to choose from here. I shouted out a couple. Sheet pan chicken fajitas. I think this is a Serious Eats recipe, but I'm a big fan of the sheet pan dinner. But yeah, sheet pan chicken fajitas, really, really good. There's a like spring fish chowder that I make that's like potatoes and cod and like a creamy broth with a bunch of herbs. That's very good. Also, I think it's like Jonah's a weirdo and that's his like favorite food. And yeah, we do like a salmon bowl, like salmon rice, some sort of like, you know, soy saucy sauce with some crispy kale on top, that sort of thing. That's a go-to as well.
I would just like it to be known that for this cooking question, I gave the listeners actionable information and you did not.
You did. There are many critiques that I want to give, but I don't want to discourage you from your weekly cooking. So I'm just going to sit tight. What?
Critiques? Wow.
Just going to sit tight. Eviscerus wants to know, if you could go back 10 years and give advice to your younger self in magic or in general life, what would you say? I wrote in all caps so many things. Go ahead.
I also was trying to think of things, but the problem is I don't think my younger self would listen.
There it is.
I think my life was on rails for the track that it was going to take, like from the time I was pretty much 16. Your life is a pick
two draft.
Because maybe if you could give yourself information that would change how you're thinking, because I first of all, I don't have a lot of regrets. Like, I've lived my life the way I want to live it generally. Mm-hmm. And secondly, I do think I generally make good decisions with the information I have at the time. And that's all you can do. Like, it doesn't always shake out the way that you want. And I feel like I had a lot of that for a period in my life, but I do feel like I've made good decisions throughout my life.
Yeah. I feel like I want to give Eviscerus like some good answers. So I'll cop to it here and say that, for non-magic things, I said, start saving money for retirement. Cause I'm now doing that, but I wasn't 10 years ago. But I also, I'm like, I could have told myself that. I don't know if I had money to save for retirement, right? 10 years ago. I probably did. But still, I don't know. And magic, I did say, I don't know if I believe this, but I did say start playing Constructed.
Ooh.
Like, I wonder if I'm
never doing that.
It's a great point. Like, I'm like, am I ever going to do it? And I guess also, why am I saying it? I think it's because there is like an itch I have towards competitive magic that the limited part of my life doesn't quite satisfy. That doesn't like get me there, you know?
Sure.
And so I wonder if I had started cultivating an interest in Constructed 10 years ago, if I could have reaped some of those rewards today. Who knows?
I think it would be actually, okay, so if I could give myself some advice, I think it would be that I might have listened to.
Here's the advice. Hold on, I'm going to just cut in. This is the one that you would say, take some salmon, set the oven to 400 degrees, get a little lemon, squeeze it on top. Okay, go ahead.
You're the worst. I think it would be to not to consistently pursue online dating. So that's how Catherine and I met. And I went through various periods where I tried it, didn't, and or resisted it for a long time because I was like, that just doesn't really seem like me. Like, you know, I'd rather meet someone in person, blah, 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 blah. I think that's what it would be. And I there were periods where like I tried it and then it wasn't successful and I was like, this is stupid. I shouldn't be doing this. So, like, tried eHarmony a couple times. That's a lot of money, expensive. But there are other ways to do it than eHarmony. I think if I could just like tell myself, I would say throw out all the stigma about online dating and consistently pursue it.
Yeah. It is funny how like that, but that did change kind of it, like we were the pilot group for like oh, it's kind of weird. You guys met doing online dating, to like, wow, every wedding I'm going to is people who met on an app.
Yeah.
You know? So stigma 10 years ago, but certainly not today.
Sunset in a Cup wants to know, how long does it take for you to figure out how good certain effects are in a limited format? For example, how good is the O-ring, the top or bottom spell, or the cancel variant? I would say for me, very quickly. I think this is one of my best skills in Magic. Like, a draft, two or three drafts. Like, I feel like I have a very good handle on this after the early access day.
Yeah, I did. I talked about you a lot in my answer to this question, because I do think you're really good at either nailing these outright or adjusting pretty quickly, with perhaps your one blind spot being to always wanting the O-ring effect to be bad when it's always good. But I think you might have even, I think you might be finally fixed in that department. And for me, I think it's more about like setting a default status to this kind of effect. Because a lot of the card examples you gave of like O-ring is always good. Cancel variant, basically cancel plus is always good now. Like whatever Rewind and Foundations was the counter plus loot was excellent. The counter plus maybe tap two things from Spider-Man, pretty darn good. Like,
yeah,
it doesn't take much for cancel to be good as long as it gets a little bit of something. And the top or bottom spell, shout out to you, I think is as good contextually as
the parts surrounding it.
Is there a cancel? Is there an instant speed draw spell? And are those cards good? And if so, then the top or bottom spell gets boosted up. And things like whatever, the enchantment, like blue enchantment removal spell is like unable to scream is an outlier. This effect is generally bad. And so just having those baselines for those kinds of cards, I think will set you up. And then just be flexible as you see them to adjust accordingly.
Next question comes from Dillo. How do you connect with your partners about Magic? What do you share with important people in your life about this thing you love when they don't engage with it? I think we both have the same default answer, which is nothing.
Yeah. I think that's like okay. And I think it's hard because I sort of like became obsessed with Magic after I met Jen. And so it wasn't like a sort of upfront, like, hey, this is a thing about me. It's sort of like, unfortunately for her, it happened after we started dating. But I think there is because this is such a big passion for a lot of people, I think there is, and this is just what I perceive on social media, there's like a really strong desire for, I have to find someone, I have to date someone who shares this passion. And I would just say I would divorce people from that idea, because having different interests is great. Me having a thing that I can do for myself, or like that gets me to find a social circle outside of my relationship with Jen, I think is very good, and vice versa. It's fun when we get to sort of like watch Survivor together, and like she's into talking about some game theory stuff. But in general, she is not a gamer like at all. And so I mostly just keep the Magic stuff to myself.
That is my default too. When Catherine and I were first started dating, she was like, oh, this thing's important to you. I need to learn about it. Like I should learn to play. And I,
nah.
I taught her like the first time. And that was fun, like teaching her how to play. And then we played a second time and she was like making obvious strategic errors. And I was like, I don't know what to do here. Am I supposed to point these out to you so that you can learn? But then she was feeling dumb when I would point them out, and like game was going really slow. And after that second time, I was like, we can't ever do this again. I'm sorry. if you want to pursue Magic on your own, you're welcome to. Showed her the Arena app. And I was like, if you want to start playing on your own, and come like revisit this in 3 months, we can do that. But this we can never do again. It's bad for our relationship. And so there's that. But she does ask about it, and I tell her things when she asks about it, but I never volunteer things. Like, she knows that LSV is the GOAT. Like, if I pop up an LSV video, she'll be like, oh, is that the GOAT? And I'll be like, yeah, it's the GOAT. And she knows what the current set's about or things like that. Or sometimes, like, I'll show her. She really likes Studio Ghibli, as we've talked about on the podcast. Yeah. And Klug Altars does, like, some Studio Ghibli altars. And so, like, anytime those pop up in my feed, I'll text them to her, and she enjoys that sort of stuff. So, I mean, like, little bits and pieces here, but the general answer for me is none, as far as the sharing goes. And I have no desire for her to want to do it. I like it being my thing. But I'm very weird that way. I like my stuff being separate. Like, I don't want my peas touching my mashed potatoes, touching my corn, touching my chicken. Like, I want it all in separate places.
Just another thing. Not that, like, I want to be very clear that I think Ben, like, I'm very excited for you to be married. But, like, that you saying that, I'm like, are you going to have fun at your wedding?
No, I know I'm not. It's going to be
all of your peas touching your mashed potatoes.
Oh, I've already thought a lot about this. I think I'm going to be incredibly, I'm going to be very excited to be marrying Catherine, but I think I'm going to be incredibly stressed the whole day about my worlds colliding. I've thought a lot about it already.
I'll be there to needle you. Siddharth Venkatesh, and I believe someone else asked a similar question. They asked, if you had to pick from three different sets for packs 1 through 3, which sets would make for the most interesting draft experience? It's very similar to another question we got, which was, you're allowed to pick a pack of 3 different unrelated Magic sets to smush together to make a draft format. What sets do you choose? I went with companion set, and goat set for me. So I said Ikoria, March of the Machine, and Throne of Eldraine.
Interesting. Okay. I went more like your graveyard remastered. I think I'm going Dustmourne, Innistrad, and then Shadows over Innistrad.
Boo.
Boo?
Picking Innistrad and Shadows over Innistrad, I think, is boo, personally.
Okay, well, sure. And Innistrad, and then insert other format with cool graveyard stuff that I can't think of off the top of my head.
Okay.
Greg Sobiskit wants to know, what mechanics or individual reprints would you be most excited to see in a future set? For Greg, it's Lesson Learned, Bargain. Oh, this is who it was. Greg. The Unnamed Neo, if you control an artifact and an enchantment mechanic.
I said a couple. I really like Explore. And mostly I like Explore from, like, trying to build around, like, Wild Growth Walker and Ixalan Limited when it wasn't something you should really be doing. But I feel like Explore is a cool mechanic that never has gotten, like, a good limited home. And I also am a sucker for Toughness Matters, like the sort of, like, big booty, high alert kind of thing where, like, you know, your toughness becomes your power type deal. I feel like we don't see that a lot.
Yeah, I think for me it is Delirium. Like, that's what I found out thinking about this cube. Like, what do I most want to do? For me, it's Delirium. Cycling, definitely, except it's really hard to support that in a cube-like environment. In a future set, certainly you could have a Zenith Flare cycling, like the one mana cycling thing. Although, I kind of just want that to be left alone in IKO. I don't want them to do it again and mess it up, potentially, because I really like how IKO was. Companion, I would definitely be excited to see. I think that is the answer.
Yeah, that's the real answer.
Companion, like, with different...
Yes.
Companion requirements. That would be my actual answer.
It makes me so sad that I think we'll never see that because they think Companion was such a design mistake. Like,
for
even
Constructed?
Like, yeah. And even with the new...
Can we just turn Limited into Commander? Give us our own rules. Who cares about Constructed?
I know. Yeah, make Limited only cards. You make, like, whatever. They're not standard legal cards. Can you make them Limited legal but not standard legal?
Yeah, please.
There we go. The other question is for me specifically. You've often said that your favorite gameplay is with Jund stuff, but it seems to me like you really love when the grindy black-based Mardu decks are viable and supported and not just aggro flavors. What would it take for you to identify as someone who loves Mardu more than Jund? And I said, apparently it would just take this question because I feel seen. And I think this is apt, Greg. I feel like you get me.
Jack Hart wants to know, favorite 2-color signpost uncommon of all time. Oof. Ethan is holding up a Dovin's Acuity. He left and went to go get it.
Stamped Dovin's Acuity from my day 2 draft at the GP. Yeah, Dovin's Acuity is my answer.
I think that's also my answer. I was gonna say that nothing really sticks out to me because usually it's a one color rare that ends up being my favorite cards in a set, but Dovin's Acuity is the answer for me too. That card was awesome.
Least favorite guild to draft. I think it's green white for me.
It's Gruul for me.
Yeah, I said red green or green white, but I think it's green white.
I solved this problem potentially in the Lords of Limited Cube.
I mean, red green delirium is a good two color archetype.
Well, red green delirium plus
lands, like, Ren and Six.
No. Oh. Heavy incorporating the red green treasure from Streets of New Capenna and trying to fix that and make it competitive.
Oh, nice. Okay, I'm into that. All right, a question I'm very excited about. AE Funk asks, challenge to each of you. Design a legendary creature card of your co-host. Share it with us and them for the first time during the episode and explain your choices. So this, I saw you pull out your phone. This one you wrote down.
I did. Yes.
Okay. Do you want to go first? You want me? I'm going to go first.
Okay. You go first.
Ben Wernie, Data Defier is, is two blue white for a 2/4 human advisor. Spells you cast cost one generic less to cast for each spell you've cast this turn. When you cast your second spell, draw a card. When you cast your third spell, put a +/+1 counter on each other creature you control. When you cast your fourth spell, take an extra turn after this one.
Ooh, love it. That's spicy.
Yeah.
All right, I've got Ethan Sachs, Lord of Mardudu. with the casting cost, Orzhov Rakdos hybrid. I feel like you like black the most.
Oh my god. Okay.
Orzhov Rakdos hybrid. You're a 1/4 human lord.
Okay.
And when Ethan enters, create a 1/1 human token unless you were the only Mardudu drafter at the table, then create 3 1/1 human tokens. Has a new keyword, beneficiary, which is whenever you sacrifice a human token, create a treasure token.
Oof.
And whenever you create or sacrifice a rectangle, each opponent loses one life.
Yes, please.
So you can build a commander deck too. I even threw it in there so you can build an Ethan commander deck. Each opponent loses a life. You can just combo off the whole table.
Honestly, thank you so much for making up a card that I could play in a format I've never played. Nova asks, you wake up and Wizards has announced that sets will no longer be designed for limited play. Is that the end of your tenure as a Magic player? Do you get really into Cube, assuming another TCG exists with limited as a playable component, even if very different? Do you go try that out? I think the short answer is, I think I'm done.
I also think I'm done. I've thought about this and I'm like, am I going to go play Flesh and Blood? And I don't think so. I think I would just be done. I would play Cube like every once in a while. I think this would be the end of the podcast and the end of my heavy engagement with Magic.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard. Like, if Cube still exists, does that mean Cube still exists on Magic Online? Like, if I can still play it on my computer, I think it would still have a life for me. If it's like, well, you got to play Cube with, like, Cube only exists in paper, that'd be tough.
Well, it just says that sets are no longer going to be designed for limited play. They would be designed for constructed only. So I assume Cube would keep existing. Yeah.
Okay.
But the podcast would die. Like, it would be the end of the podcast and our heavy engagement with Magic, and you would just play a Cube draft whenever you wanted to.
Yeah.
Or you'd play a flashback Duskmourne draft, or you'd play a flashback IKO draft, if that were still a thing that would happen.
Right.
All right, Balbadorf wants to know, 2027 Spider-Man 2 has failed. Watson needs to pull out all the stops to make sure that their next limited format is a banger and have called both of you in. They want every archetype to be viable. So what are the picks for archetypes mechanics for blue-green, white-red, green-white, and blue-red, the usual outliers of power? Give us a little more detail than just aggro Spellslinger if it doesn't hold up the discussion. I'm curious how you interpreted this question. The usual outliers of power, are these the usual allies of power in low power or high power? Because I feel like there's a mixture of each. I think about blue-green as usually low power, white-red usually as high power, green-white usually as low power, and blue-red has gotten shafted a little bit in the play booster era, but I think historically, blue-red is a high outlier of power in draft.
Yeah, I mean, I think I think they picked four very good color pairs that are outliers in one way or another. Like blue green, I think usually doesn't do well, but can, like, and when it does is sometimes too good, you know? And I think that can be sort of, sometimes these color pairs are too good or too bad. But I mostly went with picking things that I thought would be good for these color pairs, or that I would enjoy.
Sure.
Maybe for one of the answers. For blue green, I said adapt or evolve. So like a +1/+1 counters mechanic around it. Because I feel like blue green succeeds when it plays to the board and has more of a, it can be good, but has a tendency to flop when it's like blue green is ramp into big stuff. It's like, is that good? I don't know if that's good.
I think for me, for blue green, I want to see lands matter with fetches, like lands matter, landfall, fetches, and differently named lands mattering, like a marriage of all
towns,
of those.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, like designed to be spicy soup, but a better spicy soup than towns.
Yeah, I don't know. When blue-green is supposed to be multi-color, like five-color, I think I don't like that. I want that
Why?
To be like, because I want it to be like tier two. I want you to have to work for it a little bit. I think it's less fun when that's the prescribed thing for blue-green to do. Because it like, it sort of sets up blue-green as poaching from other colors, which I think is bad for... It's like, well, once you're blue-green, then you get to take the good black removal spells. Like, well, why can't I just get good blue-green cards
it's
for
fair.
Drafting blue-green? For red-white, I said some kind of equipment, like auto-equip thing, like for Mirrodin or job select. I
think that's the answer.
Rectangle-based red-white deck.
Yeah, that is the answer for red-white, and that is the answer for red-white in the Lords of Limited Cube currently.
Great. Okay.
Green-white. Also, the current answer for green-white in the Lords of the Limited Cube is tokens for me.
Oh, tokens. Okay. I wrote Enchantress because that is what I like. It's not really very good usually, but I like it. I think it's I just green-white as like go tall and go wide. I just want them to do like figure out something else. It's so boring. And I feel, I don't know. I guess.
But good green-white tokens is good.
Good green white, and I think tokens is definitely more successful
than counters or go
than
tall,
plus one counters. Yeah.
And blue red for me is spells matter, specifically spells in the graveyard. That's what like blue red has been. They've been trying to do non spells things with blue red or like weird spells things, which is why blue red has flopped so much. But when blue red is spells, just spells and spells matter in the graveyard, it's very good.
Mm-hmm. I said double spell, which is. Similar but different. I just feel like incentivize blue red to do something good. Like it's why blue white was good in Edge of Eternities. It's like double spelling is just good. And then if you're trying to do that and then you get bonuses for doing that, that's the recipe for success.
Okay.
Flo asks, I have no idea if this has been answered at some point or in some other mailbag episode, but have you or do you play any other card games outside of Magic? Why or why not? And have you considered it? And Balbadorf has a second question that is similar to this. What are some of your favorite board games? And do you have any that try to emulate the draft experience?
So answer for me about games outside of Magic. I went through a period of Hearthstone and a heavy period of Hearthstone Battlegrounds until they made it to where Battlegrounds was essentially pay to play. Like you only got two hero selects instead of four. Like you could use in-game currency to buy four hero selects instead of two. And once they changed that to only dollars currency, I was basically out, despite the fact that I was just annoyed that they did that. I could have afforded to pay for it. But so I played Hearthstone Battlegrounds. I play a lot of paper card, like playing card games, like spades and things like that. But I don't think that's what this question, like Euchre, Cinch, those sorts of Midwest card games. At some point, I'm going to become a bridge master. That's my goal late in life. Just to get super into bridge.
I really like that. This retirement vision I see for you of just like ping pong, table tennis, and bridge, I think is going to be great.
I'm going to be amazing at being retired. I don't know. Everybody's like, I don't know. My identity is tied to my job. I'm going to have no problem filling my time.
Yeah.
No problem.
Amen.
And as far as favorite board games, I would say Catherine and I really are enjoying playing Codenames duets right now. It's been very fun. If you've never done it, you put like a grid of 25 words on the table and you have to get your partner to guess words by giving them a clue of saying a thing and the number of things that relate to it. So if I said like animal two, I might be trying to get you to guess cow and sheep. But if there's like cow and sheep and frog, there are words you're supposed to not guess too, right? Yeah. So like if you accidentally guess frog and I don't want you to, we lose the game together. So that's been a very fun co-op game that we've been playing. The board game that I really like that does try to emulate the draft experience a little bit is a game called Splendor, where you take gems and you use the gems you get to buy cars that can then act as the gems. Like it's not a deck builder-y game, but it's very snowball-y. And if you have a good plan and you're going for the colors of gems that other people aren't, you do very well.
Yeah, I'm looking at this. I think I played Splendor once. I have a friend who, yes, I have played this. I have a friend who is like, he's very online and he is like gets into board games a lot. And then we go on like these sort of friend group vacations around like New Year's or July 4th and he'll bring some. And so he's how I've been introduced to these. So Splendor is a good one. Dominion is a like deck builder-y, drafty kind of game that's very good. I think someone in our Discord shouted out Seven Wonders. That's a good one. Settlers of Catan doesn't really emulate draft experience, but like Settlers and Carcassonne are board games that I like a lot. And my new favorite like playing with a group of friends game is this game called Scout. That is effectively, it's like a card game that is where you're playing like sets and runs, like in Rummy, like two of a kind or three in a row, whatever. But the mechanic of the game is once you're dealt a hand, it's terrible for Magic players because you can't shuffle the cards in your hand. Once your hand is dealt, you cannot adjust the order of the cards.
Mm-hmm.
And so part of the like fun of the game is like, oh, if I can find a way to play these two twos together, once I take those out of my hand, then that puts my run of 4, 5, 6, 7 together, and then I can play that next time. And I like those games that are like easy to learn, difficult to master, and also are mostly like you can still be social while playing them. Like they're like Codenames I like, but stresses me out, and also does not sat like. You can't be social during it. Like everyone's like, correct. Shh, try to think of the clues.
Yeah.
You know, like yeah, it's yeah. not, I don't know.
Well, we're doing the two-player co-op version. I've never played the actual game with a group of people. So I don't know how the actual game works.
Could be a good bachelor party activity.
Could be. The other game I really like that is also extraordinarily frustrating that we've played the last couple like big family gatherings is a game called Hues and Cues. Have you ever played this?
I just saw that in the in Barnes & Noble yesterday. No, what is it?
It's so tilting for me. but it's so fun. So it's just like the board is just a giant color palette. And you draw a card and there's four things on there. Like might be... there's four colors. Like, and so the grid is like A25, you find a certain shade of blue, or like F20 is a certain shade of green, yellow, or whatever. And so there's four colors. You have to choose one of them. So you get a card with four choices. You pick the one you think you can get the most people to guess. And then you give them a clue by saying like flower. No, that's a bad thing. You would give a clue, one word clue. You can say salmon. Like if you think it's the color of salmon, and then everybody else has to put their markers on the color that they think salmon is.
Salmon.
Okay. And you try to capture them in like a 3x3 grid. And if you get people in a cluster, you get points and then they get points for guessing correctly. But you want to try to get the most people to guess correctly possible. And so the thing that is frustrating about it is for me is that, which is my worst personality flaw, is that I'm so sure I'm right. Like, how do you think that's like apple or whatever? How do you think that's rotten egg or no? And you can't reuse clues. And if you don't like where people put their markers after your first clue, which is one word, then you're allowed to give a two word clue. But that gives everybody a second chance to guess. So you're like giving them to score more points against you, right? So you do better as the clue giver if you give a very accurate one word clue.
Interesting.
But it's very fun because it does what you're talking about, which is that it spurs lots of discussion and a conversation about, well, I think this because X, or like, you're insane. How do you think that's violet or whatever?
This is like one of the many reasons I don't like playing like Cards Against Humanity or Apples to Apples anymore. Like, I don't think those games are very fun. But one of the reasons I don't like those games is that, like, you know, you'll be like, I'm just like sitting on my one good card, and then I play it for your clue, and someone goes like, I really like oranges. I'm going to pick the oranges card. And I'm like, no, there is a right answer, and it is not oranges.
Yeah. Yeah. Can't play those games. Apples to Apples was very fun initially and quickly fell off for me.
Yeah. Maxim Sinistral asks, Ethan, Martin Scorsese has called you and has offered you a starring role, multi-film deal. Ben, the London Philharmonic has called you and has offered you first chair. The commitments these offers require are too great to do alongside the podcast. Do you tell Scorsese and Edward Gardner to shove it, or do you abandon us and pursue these insane opportunities?
Easy slam, pursue insane opportunities. I'm abandoning everyone so fast.
Yes, I wrote a three-letter word, bye.
Yeah.
But I also reject the premise of the question because Martin Scorsese is like 90. I think he has like one movie left in him, maybe.
Yeah. Easy London Phil for me.
Okay. From Twitter, Kelvin Odom asks, what are your favorite draft archetypes of all time that were actually a WotC ascribed deck in their respective format, i.e. red, green, exhaust, mid range, and ether drift? How did you answer this? Like, I was like, I don't even know how to go back and like see what the prescribed archetypes were for each set. Or did you just go by vibes?
I just went by vibes and I said red, white cycling and IKO.
Oh, that's a good one. You're not going to like my answer. Because it's from a set that shall not be named, which is AFR. I said black, white dungeons and Adventures in the Forgotten Realm, because I did really like that deck, and I think that was what the color pair was supposed to do, and then people were like, this is terrible, and I really liked it. So,
well, that's my answer. Live your best life.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Mark Aristak wants to know, will you ever go back to doing draft battles? Loved these. Unfortunately, Mark, I think the answer is probably no. I mean, not like a hard no, but no.
We should. Like, it's just timing is hard.
It's just time. So when those were happening, we were being paid to do draft videos. And not that we don't enjoy them enough to just do them of our own volition, but they were part of when we were making content for TCG Player. Mm-hmm. So it's already hard coordinating our schedules. Like, my schedule is insane. And if my schedule were less insane, like, I'm the problem here. Like, I just can't. Like, if Ethan was like, hey, you want to do a draft battle? Reaction would be like, I just can't. And like, could I? Yes. But I just am trying very hard to not add things to my plate, despite it being fun. Now, if it worked out to where, I was on break and you were like, hey, let's do this, the answer would probably be yes. But we would both just rather play Magic individually. Like, that kind of feels like work to me. Like, it doesn't feel fun as just like streaming, or
not as much work as like writing an article, but yeah, there's some lift to it. Yeah. I would say I'm not saying never, and I think we should try to do some. I don't know, but yeah, it's the scheduling is so hard. Real K-Mob asks, after 8 or so years, over 8 years, and with all the changes both in your lives and with the game, do you still feel you have the same passion you did on day one?
I thought about this question a lot, and I think the answer is yes. Like, I still have the same passion for making the podcast, for sure, but I think, is my engagement with Magic the same as it was on day one of starting the podcast? The answer to that is no. When we first started the podcast, you were drafting format, 300 times a format for some formats or something. And I was in the 150s. Yeah. I think both of us draft less than we did when we first started the podcast. But there was a part of that that was proving why we should have a podcast. And I think we proved that. And once we did that, I don't feel like I'm giving people any less good information about the formats. Mm-hmm. And I certainly do a lot of upfront drafting.
And in some ways, I think we're giving better information than we
did. Sure, yeah. And I think the first 2 weeks of a format, I try very hard to draft as much as humanly possible. And then after that first 2 week information period, I generally draft when I want to draft, which is in the evenings on my phone. And I do just stream less and draft less because that was a social outlet for me. Like, that was initially why I started streaming, was as a social outlet. And it still is for me when I do it. But I think as I've gotten busier and now like dating Catherine for the past couple of years, like something had to give in my life. And the thing that gave was streaming for me. And then once you give up on streaming a little bit, it is less fun to do when you do it sporadically because there's less of an audience. So like there's a natural cycle of declining, I think, with that. But my excitement for Magic or my excitement for draft or my excitement for a new format, that is as high as it has ever been.
Yeah. I think for me, the answer might be no, but it's not like, because the question is, do you have the same passion? I think no.
I have the same amount of passion, but
it's passionate.
A different passion.
Yeah, yeah. It's a different passion. And I'm like, yeah, I think when I'm not drafting on my phone at night, when I don't have to be, like when I stop playing, when I only play Magic because I feel like I have to for the podcast, that's when I should just stop. Like,
yeah.
The podcast, that is. And I'm far from that. And so in that way, I'm still passionate. I'm certainly still passionate about making a really good show and what that looks like. So it's different. So it's not the same passion, but I am passionate about different things and putting that energy differently. And yeah, we were talking about of just like lives change, times change, and commitments change. And it's hard to allocate can't allocate the same amount of time to drafting that I once did.
I will say the biggest change in Magic that has changed it for me, how I engage with the game, is data. Like that has had a very negative impact on my enjoyment of Magic as a whole, like, and the podcast. Like we initially, when we started the podcast, we were telling the story of a format, mm-hmm. and that is not true anymore. The data is telling the story of a format, and we are agreeing or disagreeing with the data, as it were.
Mm-hmm. I also think the cadence of sets makes it so you can't really draft 300 times.
True. Yes. Long enough.
You know,
that's fair.
Soma Del Noche asks, do you feel that since OTJ, and I'm not sure why that's a marker, but do you feel that since OTJ 40 plus cards is all caps sometimes correct for a limited deck, sometimes in draft, but especially in sealed? I'm not talking about the 41st card or against a mill strategy when they arise in limited, but in general.
This is Carl's rant. Carl would say yes. My answer is no. Although the thing Carl was discussing in...
This is a Mystical Dispute episode about 42 cards.
42 cards, but he was also saying 47 or whatever. And like it was more than that. It was, if you feel like your deck is a deck that can churn through your deck and you're having to, at the end of a game, make suboptimal choices, or you have card draw spells left in your hand that you can't cast because you are worried about decking, it is possible that you should be playing more than 40 cards in your deck. And it's got me thinking about it, and I have run into that in Duskmourne when I was doing the Duskmourne flashback drafts, like in heavy Delirium decks.
Yeah.
I did think about it, but ultimately the answer is no, I think, because those decks that I had where I was faced with those decisions at the end of the game, I was usually still able to win. And those decks had cards that were power outliers that I want to see more often. Ergo, yeah. I should just have a 40-card deck. Like, it's very hard to think that you should have a 44-card deck if you have a card that is an A, like, or even a B+ or something. Like, you just want to see that card as often as possible. Full stop, I think.
I agree. I said I don't really think it's ever correct, but if you want some copium about that, I would point you to that Mystical Dispute episode.
Mike K104 wants to know, what is the best draft set of all time, and why is it Duskmourne?
It might be.
It's not. It's
it might
I mean, it's
be.
A KO for me. It can't be. There's no companions there. Companions were so good. You've forgotten, my friend, what Ikeo felt like.
I have a Lurrus deck in Vintage Cube right now. I haven't forgotten. Duskmourn is really good.
Duskmourn's really good. I agree. Duskmourn is one of the best sets of all time.
It's top three for me. If I'm putting Throne of Eldraine and Ikeo up there, I think Duskmourn is certainly the third.
I would accept Duskmourn as top three. Ikeo is going to be goated for me, I think, for the rest of time. Unless companions come back. The sheer diversity, draft in and draft out, in Ikeo is unrivaled.
Yeah.
Clapper and Gill wants to know, we need to know the Mrs. Metronome backstory. It's not a very cute story. We met on Bumble. I think the cutest thing about our backstory is that I purposefully knew I was searching in Evansville, which is a larger city about an hour away from Jasper. Like, I purposefully had my search parameters up to 50 miles away from Jasper because it's a very small town. I think she accidentally had hers that wide and thought she was trying to date in the Evansville area, but I offered to drive there the first few times that we went on dates, and then hooked her in, and yeah, that's the backstory. But so we met on Bumble and did long distance for, I don't know, a year and a half before we were engaged, and then she's moved to Jasper here the last few months, and it's been amazing living in the same place.
All right, Cynthia on Blue Sky asks, what is your favorite memory from a Magic trip that doesn't involve Magic or the event itself? Most recently, I'd say the karaoke that we did at MagicCon Chicago last year was nice. Very fun. And going all the way back to our first time, was this our first time meeting, I think, was when we did the team sealed for Dominaria GP.
Maybe.
I think that was the first time we met. We did this like barcade meetup. I think you didn't make it to this. I think you got in after, but we did like a meetup at a barcade that was like, we hadn't been doing the podcast for a year even yet. But I just have fond memories of that. That was the like GP where I met Josh, AKA Dr. Stupid. He like just sort of invited us out to have some pizza at his Airbnb, and that was cool. And so I have a lot of fond memories of that.
For me, it is, I think, both times I've gone on to Magic Cons with my brothers, like traveling to Vegas with my oldest brother, Nick, and more recently traveling to, what was it, Chicago? Or did we go to Vegas with Adam?
It was Vegas with Adam,
yeah. So I think both Vegas trips with my brothers and getting a chance to connect with them, spend time with them, with Adam specifically, watching the Pacers game outside the convention, Pacers game 6 was very cool. But just very thankful for Magic and that being a connecting point with us and getting to spend time with them in ways that lots of siblings probably don't get to. I'm very thankful for all that.
Yeah. All right. Bring us home here, Kuldadroth.
Kuldadroth, what's the most expensive Magic card you each own?
I don't really know, I guess. I think I have a couple Meat Hook Massacres that I was toying with as a sideboard cards for when I was playing in the PT that I think are worth money. And I have like a Cavern of Souls promo thing from an RC that I top aided. So I think one of those is probably the most expensive, but I don't know.
Which are what, like $100?
Less, I think.
I have
in the 50 range.
I have a Chrome Mox and a Mox Diamond. Those are probably the most expensive, except my next question is, what does own actually mean? Because when we were children, I definitely owned Revised Duels that somehow ended up in my older brother's collections. So I think some of those probably belong to me, but we have a cube. We kind of just smashed all of our good cards together in a cube now. We have most of them are Nick's. He like has actively been collecting the Revised Duels, but we have a cube with a fair amount of expensive cards in it.
Cool.
Yeah. One point in my life, it was Revised Duels. Currently that I officially have in my trade binder, it's probably a Mox Diamond or a Chrome Mox, whichever one of those is worth more.
Gotcha.
What instruments do I play? That's also from Kuldadroth. Kuldadroth had a three-parter here. Clarinet is what my main instrument is. I have a master's degree in clarinet performance. I also play saxophone very well, and percussion is what I started on. I also play percussion very well. those three, like clarinet, semi-professional, saxophone, percussion, good collegiate level. Everything else they make some noise on. As far as band instruments go, like maybe good eighth grade level or something like that. You wouldn't want to listen to me play most of them, though. Tuba's my worst instrument, probably. Tuba or flute. Actually, I'm better at flute than tuba. Tuba's definitely my worst instrument.
Gotcha. And the last question from this three-part is, what is Jonah's Halloween costume this year? He's going to be Winnie the Pooh. And I will be very well cast as Eeyore. And
you're not going to be Christopher Robin?
No.
You kind of got some Christopher Robin vibes.
I appreciate that. But I think the doom and gloom of Eeyore is apt. And and Jen is Piglet. So that's what we're doing.
Very cute.
Yeah. This is fun. I don't know how often we do these. Once every 2.5 years or whatever. But
you're so pessimistic about it.
I am.
So behind the scenes for this episode. Ethan, in one of our episode, like in the Discord, every time an episode comes out in the announcements channel, Ethan tags it and puts a little blurb about this is what the episode's about. Thanks for being patrons, blah, 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 blah. And then at the very bottom of the announcement, we're also thinking about doing a Q&A episode. Nah, 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 nah. And so you had messaged me like, got crickets on the thing. I posted a thing, but that's your default is to expect to get no questions from listeners. Like that's your baseline operating. And when you messaged me that, I was like, oh, I had no idea you did that. Like, cause I just get the announcement and like immediately click off the notification and don't really read the announcement, as is human behavior. And I was like, I bet everybody else did that. So I tagged everyone in the episode suggestions channel and the responses came pouring in. So thank you all for coming through and proving to Ethan that we do have listeners that want to ask us questions.
Thank you. Thank you for the proof.
Yeah, this was a fun episode. I like doing these grab bag style episodes.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. And on that note, we're going to get out of here. Thank you, as always, to Salty Pretzels for our intro and outro music. Make sure you give it a listen.
You can find all of our content at lordsoflimited.com. There's links to our episode backlog, our YouTube channel, our Twitch streams, respectively, our merch, and our Patreon page, if you want to check that out, all at lordsoflimited.com.
If you've got any feedback about the show or any questions, shoot us an email at lordsoflimited@gmail.com.
Thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week for another episode of Lords of Limited.
Thanks, everybody. See you later.